This podcast of Trainer Talk presented by Phasic Tipton is brought to you by Finish Line Horse Products. Trainer Talk begins in just 30 seconds.
Find out why Olympic riders and top trainers from all over the world choose to use Finish Line Horse Products. At Finish Line, our mission is to provide owners and trainers with quality horse products at affordable prices. We have been family-owned and operated since 1979, and all our products are made in America. We are so confident you will be happy with our Finish Line products, we guarantee your satisfaction or your money back. For more information, visit finishlinehorse.com.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Trainer Todd Pletcher has reached the stratosphere.
It was all have another for Doug O'Neill.
Moon over Miami for Bill Mott.
$3,000 for trainer Mark Cassie.
Trainer D-Way Lucas, a sixth win.
And Bob Baffert with another incredible milestone.
But it was all for Doug McGahey.
Win number 1,000 for the great Trevor McCarthy.
Here's 2,000 for Nick Zito.
Steve Aspison is now North America's all-time leading trainer.
Now here's Mike Pena.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to the show Trainers Listen To. It is Trainer Talk, and it's all presented by Phasic Tipton right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, happy to have you with me for the next hour on Sirius 219, XM 201, streaming worldwide at horseracingradio.net and podcast on major podcast platforms each and every week. Well, the past few years have been quite a ride for trainer Brad Cox. His 8 Breeders' Cup victories over the past 4 seasons, coupled with wins in last year's Kentucky Derby and Belmont Stakes, have led him to being voted Eclipse Champion Trainer in both 2020 and 2021. And Brad is certainly showing no signs of slowing down through the first half of this year, already with more than 100 wins, 18 of those coming in graded stakes through the first 6 months of 2022, and purse earnings of nearly $12 million. But Brad Cox is not my guest on today's show. Like most successful trainers, I'm sure Brad would be the first to point out that his success is not possible without those who work with him. And in Brad's case, he gets to enjoy this incredible journey alongside his sons. His oldest, Bryson, works as his stable foreman, and younger son, Blake, is his assistant. Today, I have the privilege of welcoming trainer Blake Cox to Trainer Talk, presented by Phasic Tipton. Blake, really appreciate the time, my friend.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm fired up to hear your story. And, you know, it's obvious, you know, growing up working for your dad now for the past several years, but growing up around that operation and a home that's so ate up with horse racing, if you will, it's pretty easy to see how you got hooked on the sport.
Yeah, no, it's very easy. I mean, growing up, loved coming to the races, going to the barn with him in the summers, and just spending time with him and fall in love with the sport. And got really attached at a young age, really did. And there was no looking back. There really wasn't.
Your dad always tells the story of growing up, you know, in the shadows of the Twin Spires right next to Churchill Downs, and he would hear the bugler with the call to the post right in his backyard. I think he was parking cars in the yard, all those kinds of things that he's told me in the past. How about for you? I mean, was it just incredible to be that close to an iconic track like Churchill Downs?
Yeah, it really was. It's great being from Louisville and obviously running the Kentucky Derby here, but just Churchill being, it's just home. Like, when I go down to New Orleans and travel in the winter, it feels great to always just come home and be home. And Churchill's home for us. And, I mean, it's where we've established a very nice group of horses. We've won a lot of big races here. And, I mean, you can't beat it. It's home for us.
You know, I worked with my dad in our family business for many years before moving to Kentucky. And there were plenty of times that we didn't see eye to eye. We butted heads. And I often thought he was even more demanding of me than the other people who worked with us. Your dad, he's a no-excuses kind of guy. So is it sort of the same situation for you and even for your brother?
Yes, very similar. Very similar, I would say. Now, there's some things that he expects out of me that he doesn't expect out of other people, things that I should pay attention to, things that should happen and you don't need to ask, and just things around the barn, just like simple things that should be right. And if they're not right, then I'm not doing my job, but he might not expect another person to be able to point it out.
All right, I can ask you this next question because I've gone through it. I know exactly what you're going through. Does that ever rub you the wrong way sometimes? And you're like, hey, wait a minute. They don't have to do it this way. Why are you being so hard on me?
Yeah, I've kind of gotten used to it now, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
But in the beginning, yes. And there would be like maybe 20 to 30 minutes where we wouldn't talk to each other or I wouldn't talk to him. Now it's kind of you just wipe it off your shoulder and just keep going about your day. Things like that happen.
Yeah, as I was getting ready for the show, I read a quote from your dad where he said, when they are in the barn, I treat them like all of my employees. I probably expect more out of them. And I thought that was really interesting. And it sounds like a father mentoring his son.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. I mean, he wants us, we want to do this in life. So he wants us to give out 110% and no excuses, really. I mean, I remember in the beginning when I started, like, I would try and make up an excuse, but just come up with an excuse to like why this wasn't done or this. And he wouldn't have it. He'd say like, no excuses. Doesn't matter. Just get it done. And just things like that. And I think I've learned a lot from that. And I think it's been great.
Yeah, I want to talk more about the type of teacher that your dad is. And I want to talk more about, you know, the horses you've had the privilege to be around and your background. But before I do, your dad joined me on my equine forum show this past Saturday morning. And I told him, you know, we kind of did a little preview of what was coming up this week. And I said, you know, Blake's going to join me on Trainer Talk. And he said that he was hoping that you would have some great stories. And he said he was really hoping you would be able to tell the story of winning the Ohio Derby with Tawny Port. So go ahead and make Dad proud. Tell me that story because you did it.
Yeah. So we shipped in Friday. The horse got there around 1 o'clock and we got him out, walked him, all that good stuff, and fed him a couple hours later. He ate great. And then morning of the race, I mean, he, like good horses do, they sleep all day, chilled out all day. We came back, bridled him up, took him over, and Ira did a great job, and he got the job done.
What makes him such a special horse?
I think it's consistency, and it's consistency to be able to bounce out of races. Because you can see in about a month, we ran him about 3 times, or I think it was 5 weeks maybe.
Yeah.
And, we really put his feet to the fire there. And I mean, he bounced out of all three of them in great order. I mean, he's a very cool horse to be around. Nice, durable horse that you don't see a lot of anymore. And he's a very, very fun horse to have the rest of the year.
Yeah. Your dad told me during that interview on Saturday morning that you kind of got a little bit of a thrill and got a little excited in the Kentucky Derby when he was making his move. Did you feel that same thrill that your dad did?
Yeah, I did. And, I wasn't actually watching him from the beginning, I'm going to be honest. And then I finally picked him up because everybody around me was cheering. I finally picked him up and I was like, come on, buddy. And then he kind of flattened out. So I think if I wouldn't have found him, he might have been able to pick up a couple more horses.
Well, it's not like he was the only horse that you had to keep an eye on. You had three of them in there. How on earth do you do that?
I think it was just three-year-olds coming around at the right time because I think it was like February. I don't think we had a horse with a point, to be honest. And the horse is just maturing. Like, we had 2-turn horses that we were running short and just kind of waiting to get them around 2 turns and knowing that they would succeed around 2 turns. But it's just about kind of developing a good horse, you know.
Yeah, you had Cyberknife, Tawny Port, and Zozos were the three. How does a trainer keep an eye on all three during the race?
I don't know.
Did you keep an eye on – you said you weren't really watching Tawny Port, so obviously you weren't paying attention to him as much. But were you thinking, I have to try to check in on all my horses at some point during this mile-and-a-quarter race?
Yeah, I did check in on all three of them going into the first turn. And they threw up that fraction, and I was like, whoa, this is not good for Zozos and Cyberknife, that opening quarter. And I was like, where's Tawny Port? And I found him. And then he took so much dirt that I couldn't even find him at probably the quarter pole.
Wow.
Because Knife had already backed out and Zozos was kind of fighting, but he had already kind of showed that he's not going to get the job done today. And I couldn't find him. And then I picked him up about the 3/16 pole. And then he probably leveled off about the 16th pole. So No, but he made a huge run in the Derby. He really did.
And he was given that time off by design. I know your dad told me that story Saturday morning as well. Given a little time off, freshened him up because of those three races in a short time period that you mentioned just a minute ago. You bring him back. He wins the Ohio Derby. Is he now a horse that we can look at as being in the conversation or starting to throw his hat in the ring for that three-year-old championship, depending on what happens the rest of the season?
I think so. I really do think so. I mean, he's a horse that, I mean, he gives it 110% every single time he walks in a racetrack, I really do believe. And like his risen star at the fairgrounds, I mean, he ran behind some really good horses and some horses that had already developed. And he wasn't obviously fully developed until probably, I would say, the race before the Lexington. So, no, he is definitely a horse that's coming around at the right time, I should say. And he's a nice horse to have because he's so durable, like I said. And knowing that, like, he's going to bounce out of races in good order and you can put him on a van and he's not going to not eat for a couple of days. Like, he was straight in his tub in Ohio and bounced out of that race in great order, too. I mean, I showed up to the barn Sunday morning about 4:30, and I mean, he had licked his feet up completely clean, put him on a van about 6, and he came home and ate up his feed at Churchill.
It wasn't like you beat a bunch of cupcakes in that field either. You had the Florida Derby winner White Abario coming back to the races. You had Tampa Bay Derby winner Classic Causeway. You had Ethereal Road for the coach, Dwayne Lucas. I mean, there were some runners in there that Tawny Port had to deal with.
Yeah, no, it was a very solid race on paper. It really was. Me and the paddock judge were talking there, when we walked over, and I told him, I said, you got a good group this year. I said, this isn't like an Owendell group, because I think Owendell, he might have beaten like one horse. So it was okay. But it was a very, very solid race. I mean, obviously you had Safi's horse as a grade one winner, and then Wayne's horse that had just come off a big effort at Pimlico. And then you had McPeak's horse, which obviously is a speed horse that has shown, like, when he's loose, I mean, he is very tough. And so, no, that was a huge step up, in my opinion, to be able to run that horse down, or both those horses down, and then fend off, like, an Ethereal Road that was kind of made a run at him. But, no, I think he ran huge, and I think he did put his name in the three-year-old crop as, like, a top five horse for sure.
Yeah, especially in a season like this, right, where everything's so wide open. You don't have that one standout, dominant American Pharoah type horse.
Yep, no, exactly. I mean, Chad's got three of them. I mean, if Jack Christopher could stretch, then, I mean, he would be a serious horse as well. So, but I guess we'll find that out in the Haskell.
Yeah. Yeah, you started working with your dad full-time in 2017. You were just 16 years old, and now you're going out on your own, taking horses to races like the Grade 3 Ohio Derby, and I know that you've done it, you know, certainly before Tawny Port, but what's that like for you as his assistant? You go out there, you're the man in charge now. It's all up to you to get the horse ready, to saddle the horse. Tell me a little bit about that dynamic.
It's great that he trusts me to be able to go out of town with, like, high-valued horses and just expensive horses that we think a lot of, in my opinion. Because, I mean, some people, they, like, take going out of town very seriously. I mean, they send their top tier. I mean, so, no, it means a lot that, like, he entrusted me to be able to go out of town and be able to get the job done and knowing that everything's going to go right and that he doesn't have to be there looking over things. And, no, it means a lot to me. It really does.
Yeah, I asked your dad if he wouldn't mind sending me a few thoughts on working with you and what he sees in you as not just his son, but his assistant trainer and as a horseman. And here's what he had to say. He said, Blake is very driven and committed. He's very calm and collected. He doesn't get excited or down, but he's very level. His horsemanship and knowledge far surpass any 21-year-old in the world. What's it mean to hear your dad describe you in that way?
It means a lot. It really does. I don't think he's ever said that to me. And, no, that means a lot. And I'm glad that he sees it and, that I'm not just, like, showing up and going through the motions. Like, I'm actually getting stuff done and getting things done for my future as well. And just learning every single day And because, I mean, you can always learn. There's always something to learn, and just ask questions. I mean, I'll put that out there for any young kids listening. Ask questions, because, I mean, there's plenty of teachers out there that'll tell you, and the more questions you ask, the more you will know.
Do you view yourself in that way, the way he describes you, being driven, being calm, being collected, not getting down? Do you view yourself that way too, Blake?
Yeah, I kind of do. I will get down on a horse, I'm not going to lie. Like a horse that doesn't run good, like that we like first time out, and we'll run them. But, like, not actually at work. Like, I'll say, like, specific horses. Like, say, well, like, we liked a horse and we ran it. And obviously, like, you can say, like, oh, maybe they're not as good as we thought. Like, I'll get down on myself in that aspect of it. But, yeah, no, I do feel like I'm driven, because, like, sometimes he'll text me and say, like, hey, I need you at Monmouth in, like, tomorrow morning. And, like, I'll pack up my car and I'll get to driving that night. And I do think that he, which is good, because he expects me to be driven, because I have always been in love with it. So I think that's where we meet eye to eye. Like, we just see things the same way and both very driven.
Why do you think he said that your horsemanship and knowledge far surpass any 21-year-old in the world?
I think it's because just him teaching me everything. I'm going to be honest. I mean, he's the only teacher I've ever had, and he's taught me everything that I know about a horse, to be honest. How to run a barn, just how to take care of horses day in and day out, what to do with this, what to do with that. I mean, it's just, he's taught me everything, he really has.
There are so many other father-son trainer combinations that we've seen over the years. I mean, most recently, you think back to Mark Cassie, his son Norman, who is now out on his own training. Art Sherman, his son Alan Sherman, who they end up winning the Kentucky Derby with California Chrome. Richard and Gary Mandela, other ones that just immediately come to mind. It's got to be cool to be able to learn from your father, especially a guy like Brad Cox, who has so much knowledge to give.
Yeah, no, it's very cool. And, like, most people, like, once you leave the barn, you can't just call your boss and, like, ask him a question and just, like, kind of, like, go over the races in the form. And, like, after work's over, sometimes one of us will call each other and we'll, like, go over the whole form together, look at all of our races together. And, no, there's a special bond there that you can't beat, you really can't.
Is it ever hard to separate dad and boss and turn one of those off when you switch it over to the other one?
Not really, because I'm going to be honest, we don't do a whole lot of things outside of racing. Like yeah. When I go home, I'm looking at a form, watching a replay, something of that nature, looking at a condition book. And I mean, always thinking about horses, and I feel like he is the exact same way. And that's why we link so well and work together so well. I really do.
Talking with Blake Cox, who is the son of 2-time Eclipse Award winner Brad Cox, and now working as his assistant. When you describe your dad as a teacher, how would you describe your dad as a teacher? I guess that's a better way to ask that question, Blake.
I would say he's obviously a very good teacher. And we have a few other younger kids in the barn that just started, and even the things that they've learned since they've been working for us, and stuff that my dad taught them, or I taught them, that I learned from my dad. And it's just, it's something that he expects, and it's, I don't know, but he's good at it.
Yeah. It's funny. And to listen to you talk about, hey, we don't do a whole lot outside of racing. So it's kind of easy to, you know, keep the dad and the boss thing kind of separate, because we're always together thinking racing. Your dad was quoted in an article that I found that was written in 2014, 8 years ago. It was written by Hall of Famer Jenny Reese in the Courier Journal. And he was quoted as saying that, I think to be real successful at this, you've got to be somewhat obsessed. And it sounds like, I know your dad was, and it sounds like you are too.
Yeah, there's no doubt. You have to be obsessed or addicted. I mean, it really is. Like, you have to get up in the mornings every single day. There's no days off if you want to succeed in this. And you got to love it. You really do. And, I mean, we go through all of our horses before they train. We bring them out with a snap on, jog them up the road, check their legs, and then put we'll put wraps on them, polos, and then we'll go out there and train. Like, there's no messing around, really. Like, I mean, we get things done and we do things the right way, and that's why I think we've had so much success in recent years. We've finally gotten like good horses and top tier horses, and then it's starting to show.
Yeah, that quote in 2014, that was before Brad Cox was even Brad Cox, if you will.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty wild. I think at that point, I think you were I think you were 3 years old. I think your brother might have been six at the time that article came out. So, I mean, you didn't have any clue about really what was going on at that point. But take me back to the beginning. Enough about your dad. He gets enough publicity. Take me back and tell me how Blake Cox first started to fall in love with the sport.
So I would say when I was about 10 to 12, I really fell in love. I mean, like, always went to the barn, all that stuff. Really fell in love with, like, the bloodstock end of it. And I was always, like, sneaking a form into school and just reading it front to back 10 times the whole day. And I really fell in love with the bloodstock end of it. And, I mean, I could have named off any horse on any backside, what they were buying, what kind of mare they were out of. And then I would say probably when I turned like 14-ish, I decided, you know what, I like the action. I think I want to train race horses. And then in summers I would work, and it would be hard because we were playing baseball, basketball, and football. So, I mean, it was three sports. And, no, it was hard to go to the track, but when we did, we loved it.
What was your best sport?
I would say baseball.
What position did you play?
Shortstop and third base.
Was it hard to give that up when you started going full time with dad?
Yeah, actually, I sprained my ankle in a basketball game, and it was kind of like never the same. Like, it always kind of hurt. And so then I decided to give that up, and I said, that's enough on that. I'm not going to make much money playing baseball in life.
Oh, yeah, so start working with these you know, big racehorses, because nothing ever goes wrong when you're working around racehorses, right? You never get hurt.
Exactly.
Yeah, pretty cool. Do you still follow baseball and football and basketball? Do you follow other, you know, teams and professional teams or anything like that?
A little bit, not as much as I used to. When I was going to school growing up, I used to love following sports, all that stuff. And now with just how busy we are, I mean, it's really hard to, like, I couldn't, like, tell you, like, the guy that played for the Phillies 3 years ago, where he's at or something like that. But, I mean, I'll still keep up with scores and stuff like that, but not as much as I used to. It's too hard.
Yeah. You know, your brother Bryson, who, as I mentioned, for people that are just joining us and didn't catch us at the beginning, he works as the stable foreman with your dad. He said that he remembered getting out of school and going immediately to the racetrack to feed the horses, and that was when you guys were back in middle school. You had that same experience?
Yep. We used to come back in the afternoon. My father or my uncle would pick us up, and we would go straight to the racetrack. If we had runners or didn't have runners, it didn't matter. I mean, we were grabbing a feed scoop and jumping right in.
And I guess your grandfather, Jerry, played a bit of a role, too, in getting you guys involved?
Yeah, at a very young age, I mean, he would bring us over there. I mean, he was like a $2 better, but, I mean, he loved it. He was there every day. He would bring us, and we loved it. And that's who got my dad into it, kind of, because, I mean, he would come to the races, I mean, just about every day, and just hang out in the owner's trainer's lounge and just have a good time.
Yeah, your dad would sneak into the racetrack at, I think, the age of 10 or something, he was telling me. He'd sneak into Churchill Downs, and he'd start charting horses in his notebook. And then at 13, he started working as a hot walker. But he got that job because he lied about his age, right? He had to be 16, and that's the only way he got hired.
Yeah,
pretty wild. I mean, you talk about being driven. That is certainly what Blake Cox is, and he gets that from his dad and, of course, his older brother Bryson as well. They are all driven. They're all having a lot of success with the Brad Cox camp. when your dad went out on his own in 2004, he had just three horses. That's, you know, that's kind of mind-boggling, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And to look at it now and to see that all that work paid off, I mean, it really is special to, like, be able to see what he's created and what he's built and what he started with. I mean, he started from the ground up. And I remember he picked us up from school when he had Midwest horses. And I mean, there was probably like 40 horses in the shed row, and he picked us up from school and we came to the barn, and I think we had two horses in the shed row. So, like, I mean, he was back to the bottom again. He really was. He had to start completely over, and he rebuilt it.
Yeah, I think I misquoted or misspoke when I said that you were 3 years old in 2014 when that article came out by Jenny Reese. You were 3 years old when your dad started on his own in 2004, so you were 13 when that article came out. You know, there was one other thing that was in that article that I found very interesting. At 10 or 12 years old, your dad told his father, your grandfather, that he wanted to be the next Dwayne Lucas. You think he's done that?
He might have a little further to go, but he's close for sure. I do think he's achieved his dreams of winning big races and being on the big stage. There's no doubt. And he's exceeded my grandpa and his father's expectations and all of our expectations. I know he's always believed in himself, but I mean, I remember we used to watch big races together and he would say, I'm going to win that race one day. I'm going to win that race one day. And you kind of just like roll your eyes. But I mean, we're here now and we're winning those big races.
Yeah. He told me, and I've said this on the air quite a bit, that he had three goals that he set out for himself. Number one was to win the Kentucky Derby. Well, check that box off now. Number two was to win an Eclipse Award as the leading trainer. He's done that two times now. Check that box. And his third one was to get into the Hall of Fame. You think your dad is a future Hall of Famer?
I think so. I really do. And I don't think he's allowed to get in yet, I don't believe.
No.
I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But, no, I think from past people, I've looked it up, and I'm sure he has too, on people that have been inducted into the Hall of Fame. I think he's in on his looking at his list of grade one wins and his success. I think he's in.
Yeah, and that success doesn't come without an entire team around him. You're part of that. Your brother is part of that. But there are others too. There are grooms. There are hot walkers. Tell me about a couple of the other folks that work with you that, you know, you couldn't do it without them.
Jorge Abrego. I'm working with him right now. And, I mean, he does a fantastic job. He's been with my dad for, I don't know, 8-10 years at least. And maybe 12 years, actually. And, I mean, I remember him when I was growing up. I mean, he would teach me little things. He's another teacher as well, in my opinion. He taught me a lot. And, he's a great guy, great horseman, and he's driven as well. I mean, he's up every single morning, and he does a great job.
Do you find yourself having to be a teacher now that you're getting a little more experience and some of the new people come on board and you've got to try to help them along too?
Yeah, I think so. Just like getting new grooms, new hot walkers, just teaching them the ropes. I mean, they're just – and like some kids, like they're still in high school, they'll come and walk hots for the summer and stuff like that, which is great. Great for the sport and great for us because we're always looking for help. But just showing them the ropes, never been around horses before, and just kind of teaching them about it.
Visiting with 21-year-old Blake Cox, the assistant trainer and son of 2-time Eclipse Award winner Brad Cox, going to continue the visit right after this short commercial break. Blake, stay with me. When we come back, we'll look back on some of the horses that have stood out to you over the years, some of your favorites and some of the ones that you've just fallen in love with for whatever reason. We'll do that next. It's Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
The July Selected Horses of All Ages sale, now featuring both horses of racing age and breeding stock. Since 2013, this sale has produced 28% stakes horses, no less than 60 stakes winners, and over $60 million in racetrack earnings. Recent graded stakes winners include Cross Border, Fast Boat, Fearless, Jalen Journey, Stiletto Boy, and Summer in Saratoga. July Selected Horses of All Ages, Monday, July 11th in Lexington, Kentucky. Where will you be?
Achieve Equine, makers of Flare Equine Nasal Strips, brings you innovative, evidence-based products for the health and well-being of your equine athletes. like the new Impact Protection Half Pad from Europe, VIP Equestrian, that provides a superior layer of cushioning for the horse's back. Visit AchieveEquine.com for more information on the innovative products we offer. That's AchieveEquine.com. Breathe easy, we've got your back.
It's time now for the first bet of the week, presented by First Bet.
This week's first bet comes in race 8 at Gulfstream Park tomorrow at 4:15 p.m. Eastern. That is number 2, Panorama Trick. With a 31% win projection from First Bet, he rates 15 points higher than the next closest competitor and caps a mandatory payout in the Rainbow Pick 6. Trainer Jose Francisco D'Angelo's runners were 6-10 at Gulfstream last week, according to BetMix, freshened 2 months since going off form at Tampa. That's number 2, Panorama Trick, in race 8 at Gulfstream Park tomorrow. Your first bet of the week.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number 1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
This is Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Harvest Moon is the leader with a quarter mile to go in the distaff. Leading Monoboy Girl a length and a half. Valiant's third up on the outside. Harvest Moon is right there. Swiss Skydiver is looking for running room down toward the rail. Monoboy Girl got the jump, though, and she leads the field into the final furlong. Valiant's to her outside. Harvest Moon third. Swiss Skydiver fourth. Valiant's trying to catch Monoboy Girl. Late run from Dunbar Road to third. Monomoy Girl in front. Monomoy Girl wins the distaff by 2 lengths on the line for Floron Giroux in 1 minute 47.84 seconds.
Welcome back to Trainer Talk, presented by Fasig Tipton here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you on this Wednesday edition of the show. And visiting with Trainer Blake Cox, who's the assistant for his dad, Brad Cox, the trainer of multiple champion Monomoy Girl. That call coming courtesy of our good friend Kurt Becker at Keeneland. The 2020 Breeders' Cup distaff, and it was so impressive. Monomoy Girl had so many impressive victories in her career. That's certainly right up there with them. She won 14 of 17 starts, more than $4.7 million in earnings. The Eclipse champion, three-year-old filly in 2018, and Eclipse champion older dirt female in 2020. We're going to talk more about her and so many other horses that Blake Cox has been around over the past several years and working with his dad. But first, I want to remind you that if you did miss any portion of this program, simply head back over to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can listen to the podcast at your leisure. You can do that with all of our Trainer Talk shows, and you can do that on every major podcast platform, including Apple Podcasts and Podbean. Blake, that was a pretty impressive effort, wasn't it? Monomoy Girl winning the Breeders' Cup, but there were a lot of those in her career.
Yeah, it sure was. I knew exactly what replay that was. As soon as you started, it really did. It gave me chills. Now, that was a special race like a lot of hers. I mean, she had went through adversity, being off, I think, 15 months, and then coming back in the allowance race, and then coming back in the Ruffian, and then the La Troyenne, and then to bang out her second Breeders' Cup. I mean, it was great.
You told me that she was or is your favorite horse of all time. What makes her your favorite horse?
I think she was just the first for everything for us. I mean, she was our first Grade One winner, first Oaks winner, first Breeders' Cup winner. I mean, she was the first good horse, I should say great horse that I've ever been around, and she taught us so much. And I mean, we got a lot of good horses because of her, in my opinion, because we proved that we can sustain a good horse throughout a year and be able to keep them competitive and winning grade ones. And she taught us so much that, and just like little things like just being a horseman and stuff like that. Cause she was so, she had a mind of her own. She really did. She could be a little tough and just like kind of get in heat and just be a little grumpy, I should say.
Yeah.
And, it was really a little finicky to be around. But, I mean, when you sat her on the fence and showed her where to go, I mean, she was unbelievable.
I'm glad that you corrected yourself when you said good horse, and you said, no, wait a minute, our first great horse. And I think the word great, it with all sports, it gets thrown around a little too loosely. But with a horse like Monomoy Girl, the word great certainly applies. And there is a difference between a good horse or even a very good horse and a horse that you consider great.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, we had plenty of grade two, grade three winners before she came along, and those are great horses. I mean, I love being around those too, but I mean, there's not many horses that compare to her. I mean, when you think of her, you think of Beholder, Rachel, Zenyatta, and I mean, she's on that list now. It's pretty cool to be on that list.
Do you remember the first time that Monomoy Girl really made an impression on you that you're never going to forget?
Yeah, I would say in her two-year-old year when she won the Rags to Riches. I remember it was really cold out, and I remember walking up with her. I was on her offside. I remember walking up with her, and we ran her in the one-turn mile Rags to Riches, and she broke really sharp, and she opened up like five on them and just never looked back, and we're like, wow, this filly's very nice. I mean, she could be anything.
She came back in her next start. That was the Goldenrod, and she ends up finishing second that day behind a horse called Road to Victory. She was a heavy favorite that afternoon. She was only beaten a neck, but she was still beaten. Did you start to say, okay, what just happened here?
Yeah, kind of. And I've never seen my dad so mad after a race after that one. I'm going to be honest. I'll put that out there. And
yeah.
No, we were all kind of like scratching our head. I mean, obviously they were rolling around there, but the filly that was on the lead, I mean, she kept going, but I do think she got a little lost. I really do. I think she was looking around, looking at the grandstand, like she was switching leads. And that's kind of when we learned, like, she doesn't really like the stick, or she doesn't care for it, I should say. She doesn't mind being flagged, but once you hit her, I mean, she doesn't like it. She's either going to duck in or duck out, whichever way you hit her. So no, we learned a lot from her in that effort when she got beat, but, it was a hard beat because she was undefeated at the time.
Yeah, and all it did was make her mad, because then she comes back and rattles off five consecutive greatest stakes wins. Four of those were in grade ones. In terms of a horse's focus, do you think that sometimes when they lose a race, and I don't know if it happened in this occurrence certainly, but do you, just in general, when horses get beat, do you think that sometimes it makes them mad and that they come back and refocus even more?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just spitballing here. I've always wondered that. Like, if horses – I know you said your dad was kind of upset after that race. Do horses get ticked off and say, okay, and then all of a sudden you see him go on this big winning streak?
I feel like her, yes. Yes, I really do. Because, I mean, she was still lost, obviously, out there, just, like, didn't really know what was going on. And I feel like horses like her, yes. I mean, they're mad when they don't get their win picture taken, like a Zenyatta. Like a Rachel Alexandra. I mean, those horses that just go over there, and no matter what you lead them over in, I mean, they're going to get the job done. And those horses, they're hard to find, but when you get one, I mean, they're a lot of fun.
When she won the Breeders' Cup Distaff for the first time in 2018, of course, it occurred at your home track at Churchill Downs. Take me back to that day. What do you remember about that performance?
I remember her early in the morning. Like, we had walked her very early, like 5 o'clock. And she was always a very, very smart filly. She was almost a little too smart. And, like, I went in to go feed her, and she's already laying down. And she would lay down all morning. And you see with these good horses now that we're starting to get some of them, they really take care of themselves. And I think that's one thing that she did. And by, like, not overdoing it, because, like, even in her work, she wouldn't gallop out real good. Or she would gallop out good, but, like, not, like, a great horse, you should say. And and she would just sleep all day, day of the race. Like, she knew when she was going to run. She really did.
After that race, she didn't start again until May of 2020. So she went from November 2018 to May of 2020 before she came back to the races. There were a lot of people that were thinking, okay, Monomoy girl, we've seen the last of her. She's not going to come back to the races. What was the attitude internally with you and your dad and your brother and the team with Cox Racing?
Well, we had her at the fairgrounds and then got her back to Churchill, and then she had a setback again, and then got her back again to Churchill, and then had a setback again, and then got her back into the fairgrounds, and then brought her back to Churchill, and she was training as good as she was as a three-year-old. And once you send a horse home twice, you don't really think, like, okay, they're going to come back again. So really, I didn't really think she was even going to come back at five. But I mean, when I heard she was, I mean, obviously you're ecstatic, and she came back better. I mean, she really did.
Yeah, to see her come back and win that allowance race at Churchill on May 16th of 2020, it was remarkable. I mean, we've seen great training jobs over the years, right? And it happens all the time in our sport. But moments like this, the moment she gets back, she's going into the starting gate for that race. You had to send her home twice already. Boy, what was going through your mind as she's loading into that allowance race, into the starting gate?
I was very nervous. I was very nervous. Can't lie. I mean, we had a lot riding on it. I mean, because you see plenty of horses that get that much time off, and then they're just not the same horse. But she was showing us in her works that that was not true. But you still got to kind of put them in the starting gate and have them show you if they're back or not. And she was.
She wins that race. Take me back to the moment she crosses the finish line. Describe your emotions.
Relief, I should say.
Yeah.
And just like thinking, we did it. We did it. We got her back. And she didn't like really kick away from him that day. She ran against a decent little filly Asmussen had, I remember. But she didn't really kick away from him, but she never really has. She never like would really open up on a horse. She would always kind of like just duck in, look, and just always looking at something. But she was such a fun filly to be around. She really was.
Yeah, she showcased that brilliance and that greatness, as you described it, in her next four starts, winning the Grade 2 Ruffian at Belmont, the Grade 1 La Troyenne, the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Distaff, then the Grade 3 Bayakoa at Oaklawn in 2021. She just, you know, she continued to just excel for many, many months to come. And that's, you know, kudos to you and to the team for having that belief and that faith. Even when things didn't look good, you were able to, you know, kind of keep the faith and stick to the plan.
Yeah, no, totally. And we had a lot of help with Liz Crow. Obviously, she bought the horse. And I think she had, like, there wasn't a question, like, with her. She wanted to bring her back at five. She was all about it. And I think that's kind of what brought her back, to be honest, is Liz being on her side and having faith in her and thinking, okay, she can be just as good as she was, if not better. And no, I mean, I would like to thank Liz for that, for sure.
We could spend another 30 minutes talking about Monomoy Girl, but there were a few other graded stakes horses that have come through that Brad Cox barn over the years and others that have captured your heart, I'm sure. Monomoy Girl might be your favorite for good reason. Who are some of the other horses that stand out to you, Blake?
I would say Mandaloon, Essential Quality, Kofifi. Who else?
Good. Well, stop with Kofifi for a minute, because you mentioned Mandaloon, now a Kentucky Derby winner. And by the way, pointing for the Stephen Foster, we'll talk about that in a minute. And then Essential Quality. But Kofifi, winner of the Philly and Mare Sprint, yeah, but she's not the name that jumps out to you when you think about all the Brad Cox horses, but certainly to you. How come?
Just because I remember we got her in as a two-year-old. She had been at Keeneland for a little bit, short period of time, and then I remember it didn't take my dad long to get her over to Churchill. And that's usually what he'll do. They go through Keeneland, go through the ropes. I mean, just – and then, like, once they're kind of ready to go, we'll bring them to Churchill. And he brought her to Churchill, and he talked he told me like how nice she was. And like, I remember the first time we breached her, we were all like, wow. I mean, she is serious. And we ran her first time out in September with Sean Bridge Mahanon, and she galloped.
Yeah, and that'll make an impression on you very quickly. And then, as I mentioned, she wins the Philly and Mare Sprint in 2019. She took the Test Stakes, I believe, before that, didn't she?
Yeah, she did. It was Serengeti Empress and her battling down to the wire in the Test. It was a great, great race. I go back and watch that replay all the time. It gives me goosebumps. It really does.
What's your favorite replay to go back and watch, Blake?
I would say Monomoy Girls Oaks.
Would that be your favorite Monomoy Girl moment?
Yeah, probably, because it was. I'm usually not emotional, but it was a very emotional moment, just being on a big stage like that. And I mean, we had just won our first Grade One less than a month before that, and then we're winning the Kentucky Oaks. It was a very special moment.
Visiting with Blake Cox, the son of trainer Brad Cox. He, of course, is assistant trainer. If you missed any portion of the show and this conversation, Blake talked about how he got started and got interested in racing. He talked about learning from his dad. That was all in the first half of the program. You can go back and check out the podcast at horseracingradio.net and on every major podcast platform right after we finish up here at 7 o'clock Eastern. Mandaloon. Pointing for the Stephen Foster, but let's look back on what happened on the first Saturday in May last year. I know your dad has told the story many times when he's been on the show with me that, you know, he learned that he won the Kentucky Derby after Medina Spirit was disqualified via text message. Not exactly the way you want to get your first Kentucky Derby win, but I'm sure you'll take it. How about you? What did he do? Did he shoot you a text after he got texted and say, hey, we just won the Kentucky Derby?
Yeah, he did, actually.
So you learned via text, too.
Yeah, he sent me a text, and he was like, I think Mandaloon might get put up in the Derby. And I was like, you don't really believe it, really. And I remember, I don't live far from him, and I drove to his house, and we just sat there, and he told me about it. And no, it's not the way you want to win it at all, but you'll take it. And, I mean, you'd love to have a win picture. You'd love to be able to bring the roses home and keep them and – not the way you want to win it, but we'll take it.
Yeah, think about that, right? Bill Mott, a couple of years before, Bill Mott gets his first win via disqualification in the Kentucky Derby, and now maybe future Hall of Famer Brad Cox gets his first win via disqualification. But the thing that was really cool, in my opinion, was the fact that that was his very first and your very first Derby starter. How cool is that?
Yeah, no, it was very cool. And, we had a few horses that we could have run leading up to that year. I think there was a horse, Dazzling Jim. Don't quote me on this. I think it was like 2016 or 17. He was on the AEs, and I think a horse actually scratched. But he would have been on the AEs, but we didn't enter was the deal. And we could have run horses like that, and maybe the COVID year, I think Shared Sense had enough points to go in it. But, I mean, we were kind of looking at other places to spot him around, like Oklahoma and places like that that ended up working out. But, yeah, no, a lot of people say that. They're like, that was Brad Cox's first Derby starter? I mean, that's crazy. And, no, it really was. And it was an amazing experience just to walk over the lead up to it, training your horse every day with the yellow saddle towel and all the media being around and everybody taking pictures of the horses. And that was an unbelievable experience.
You mentioned the name Essential Quality. You said he meant a lot to you. How come?
I would say just Champion Juvenile. And I won't say most, but a lot of Champion Juveniles will come back at three and they don't really take a step forward. This horse took a step forward, if not two. And he came back in the Southwest and rolled in the mud and then came back in the Bluegrass and fought off the Chad Brown Clarovich horse and showed that he will, like, if he's in a dogfight, he will finish. And then leading up to the first Saturday in May, we really liked him and Mandaloon a lot. And Mandaloon was training unbelievable as Essential Quality was, And then we found out a lot in the Derby, I felt like, with this horse, because, like, you can see in the turns, like, he's trying to lean out a little bit and just kind of just losing focus. And because Louis was having to get after him, like, going into the first turn. And so, no, I felt like the Derby, we learned a lot with this horse, and that helped us out for the Belmont for sure.
Yeah, people forget that in the Derby that now Mandaloon has been declared the winner, that Essential Quality was the favorite in there, and he finished fourth. But people forget that he was even in that race with Mandaloon because of what happened with Medina Spirit and then eventually Mandaloon being put up. But, yeah, Essential Quality was the favorite in that race and ends up finishing fourth about 4.5 lengths behind.
Yeah, and he did not have a trip that you want at all. I mean, he was wide kind of throughout for the most part. Which, I mean, when you're on a horse that's favorite, I mean, you can usually overcome things. But that was the type of trip where, like, I don't think any horse was overcoming what he had to go through. I mean, he was six wide at the turn, four wide into the first turn. And it wasn't a great trip, but, I mean, that's the Derby. It's 20 horses. I mean, you're not going to get a great trip.
Where does Nick's Go rate for you?
I'm going to be honest. I put him two.
Behind Monomoy.
Behind Monomoy, yes. I'm going to be honest. Too.
Yeah, but boy, what a ride he took you guys on.
Yeah, no, for sure. And being able to, like, travel around with him. And he was a very tough horse, too. Like, in the mornings, I mean, he would get very aggressive in his works and in his gallops. Like, we had a very good gallop boy on him. Edvin Vargas is his name. He did an unbelievable job with him throughout the 2 years that we had him in our care, and he was another horse I learned a lot from as well, like just testing out different bits, I mean draw reins and just little things like that. I learned a lot from that horse, and now he means a lot to me. I went to Saudi Arabia with him. That's the furthest I've ever been from America. We spent about a month over there. It wasn't a great outcome, but no, we met a lot of people and learned a lot over there.
What was that experience like?
It was great. I believe it was the second year of the Saudi Cup, because the first year they had it, and then COVID hit, and then we came the next year, and it was a lot of fun. It was very different, I should say, and different as in a good way, just like a different aspect of the way they train horses. Like, it would take like 40 minutes to walk to the track and back. Like, it's just like kind of European style and just it's a very horse friendly place. I like it a lot.
How about Saudi Arabia itself? Were you comfortable there in Saudi Arabia? Did you enjoy the experience outside of the racetrack?
Well, it was COVID year, so they made everybody like stay on track.
Oh.
And got out of the airport, got into a car, went to the racetrack, and then 4 weeks later got back into a car and went to the airport. So it's the only time I spent out of the racetrack.
What was your favorite local food?
They had a buffet every day that we ate from, and I think they had like some spaghetti, some type of chicken and spaghetti, and I think I ate that every night, I'm going to be honest.
Right, wait a minute now. That doesn't sound like authentic Saudi Arabian cuisine. I mean, you're talking about chicken parmesan here. Isn't that supposed to be Italian?
Yeah, I know. They had a buffet. Wasn't much to choose from.
No hot browns in Saudi Arabia?
No hot browns.
Blake Cox with me here on Trainer Talk, presented by Fasic Tipton. As you heard him say, Saudi Arabia, a great experience for him traveling over there with Nick's Go back in 2021. Of course, Nick's Go finished fourth that day, but he would come back and have one brilliant campaign in 2021 that led to him being voted Horse of the Year. When his name was announced as Horse of the Year, you kind of knew it was coming. I think everybody knew that he was pretty much a shoe-in for that title. But when you finally heard it and it became official, what was that like?
It was great, because we kind of knew all along, like, how good he was. And the question was a mile and a quarter until, I would say, probably the Whitney.
Yep.
And we ran in the Whitney, and he had been training at Ellis leading up, and he shipped up. I was up there, and he shipped up probably 5 days before the race. And if you go back and watch his replays, like, it's insane how much he opens up on horses when he hits his left lead into the turns. And that's kind of – I think that's how he just created separation. I think that's how why he was so great. He would just open up on horses and just run them off their feet early, and they just couldn't get to him.
I'm going to throw another name at you, and you can tell me what you remember about this horse, because he was always one of my favorites. Maybe not the most prominent, but one that always showed up. Arklow.
Yes. Arklow. Traveled around with him a ton. And I love going to Kentucky Downs with him because he always runs well. He tries every single time you lead him over there. And taking him out to Del Mar numerous times. I won a grade two out there with him, went out there. I think it was the Joe Hirsch maybe? Or no, it was the Hollywood Cup or something. I can't remember the name of the race. But it was a grade two. It used to be a grade one. And now a very cool horse. He's actually back in the barn at Churchill. And very cool horse to be around.
Yeah, Blake, we're down to the final 4 minutes or so here in the program. It has been such a delight to hear your story and hear you, you know, talk about some of the experiences and learning from your father and being there with your brother. It's truly a family affair, and that has to make it really, really special to go through the wins, but even when there's some low times, to be able to go through it as a family, boy, that has to make it pretty special.
Yeah, it definitely does. I mean, you have somebody to lean on and just pick you up, I should say, when you're down and you're going through a drought and not winning races and stuff. I mean, you have people to rely on, people that are always there for you and things like that. I mean, it makes it very special.
How big of a goal is it for Blake Cox to get his own shingle outside his own barn at some point?
It's what I want to do for sure. There's nothing obviously set in stone right now. I'm around good horses, good clients, and good help, and you can't beat that. But and you don't really want to leave that, and I think it's going to be very hard one day to leave that. And but no, one day I would definitely like to train out on my own.
How about your brother, Bryson? Do you think that he ends up going out on his own at some point too? Is that the goal?
I think he wants to. He's actually big into the bloodstock as well. He'll still work cells and stuff here and there.
Yep.
And but no, I do think that he would either go toward the bloodstock end or the training end. I don't think he's decided yet, which, I mean, we're still young. He doesn't have to, but he's definitely going to be in the game in some sort of way.
Well, again, you learn from one of the best in your dad, and you know, I know that he's also your boss, but he's a teacher and a mentor, and boy, what a wonderful thing that is. All right, Blake, before I let you go, we're inside of 2 minutes now, coming down to the final 16th of a mile, if you will, here in this program. I always like to wrap it up by asking trainers to let me know something about them we haven't talked about yet. Maybe people don't know. So any other hobbies or interests or things that you enjoy? I know you don't get a lot of time away from racing, but are there other things that you do enjoy doing other than horse racing?
I wish I could give you one, but I really can't. I'm going to be honest. No, I mean, it's literally just going to the barn. You leave at noon, you go home, get you a bite to eat, you turn on the races, and then you go back at 3 and you're there for another 2 hours, and then you come home, make dinner, maybe watch some replays, look at the form for the day that they entered for, look at the overnight. I mean, it doesn't stop, and I don't want it to.
You have to be obsessed if you're going to win this, win in this game, and that is exactly what Blake Cox and his dad and his brother Bryson are. They are doing a fantastic job. Blake, really appreciate you sharing your story here, and all the best moving forward, my friend. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Mike. I really appreciate you having me on, and you have a great day.
All right. If you missed any portion of this visit with Blake, you can head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. Check out the podcast. You can do it on Apple Podcasts and Podbean and every major podcast platform as well. I'd encourage you to do it. Boy, what a really fun visit, and a future star in the sport, no doubt. He's learning from one of the best. My thanks to my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios. For my special guest, Blake Cox, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of Trainer Talk, presented by Faisal Tipton.